are there any of these quarterbacks that you think is the most interesting, or that the idea of you playing on that team gets you the most excited?
Well, I think Michael Penix to the Seahawks would be fun just because it's the same offensive coordinator, and they have...
Yeah, I like this one, too.
Yeah, so he's playing with three great receivers in Seattle. He's going to have... He had three receivers from the University of Washington go to the NFL, or going to get drafted in the NFL. So this would be the least change or adjustment, I think, I can think of any quarterback.
Yeah, definitely.
Literally the same offensive coordinator. How often does that happen?
Yeah, he could live... He might not have to move.
Literally,
he
doesn't want to. Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt, as always. Today's Wednesday, April 10th. 2 days from me being on an airplane. I should probably be at the Dallas airport, but going to Spain for a couple weeks. Going to some soccer games, golfing out there. I get back the day before the NFL draft, so we're probably not going to be able to do an episode before that for a couple weeks. So we're going to do some draft stuff today. We got my top 32 players, as well as my ideal destination spots for all of the top six quarterbacks. Now, keep in mind, most of those are not realistic, but, you know, everyone, we can talk about Caleb Williams in Chicago all day long. Might as well have some fun with it. There's also been a lot going on in college basketball. Coach Cal's out of Kentucky, which I didn't think would happen for a long time. UConn won the men's, South Carolina women's. So a lot to talk about today. Masters coming up as well. Matt and I are going to California. I kind of invited myself on his trip next March, so only 11 months away from that. We're feeling good.
Yes, counting down the days.
Counting down the days. As always, Matt, shall we start with the ick of the week?
Of course.
You love this part so much.
It's my favorite.
Okay. This week's ick. Fellas, if you want to keep your girl, don't look through a telescope.
That is the worst one. That is officially the worst one.
I'm just presenting the information.
That's a joyful, wonderful thing. Wait, did you see, it was 2020 because we were all wearing masks. But we went to the neighbor's house and looked at the telescope. And you could see the rings of Saturn.
Oh, I actually do. Was that during COVID?
It was when I did it. It was amazing, though.
Wow.
Like, who doesn't want to look through a telescope? That's great.
Yeah, well, maybe that's why we're still single.
If I don't want to give up looking through telescopes, so I guess I'm good then.
That's where you draw the line.
That's it. It's telescopes. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize Boston was 14 games ahead of the second place team in the East. I knew it was bad. I didn't realize it was that bad. But then, from 2 to 8, there's 4 games difference. That's insane. It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy.
Okay. Should we start with the basketball stuff and then go to the NFL stuff?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, UConn beat Purdue, men's national championship. I honestly don't feel like there's a ton to talk about there.
No, yeah, it just seemed like once they figured out how to slow Zach Edey, and when I say slow, he still scored like 30 points or something, but that was just kind of it.
Well, it's crazy to me, and this may be the most absurd stat I've truly, except for maybe the Barry Bonds crazy stats. UConn's been to 7 Final Fours, and they have 6 national championships. That is an absurd number.
It is really crazy. Like for context, North Carolina has 6 national champions. They've been to how many Final Fours?
Like 32 or 33 or something like
that. Yeah, I was going to say 32, but I wanted to figure you
out. Yeah, I think, let's say 32 with a small question mark. But
it's a lot more than 7.
Yeah, and it's honestly, that's going to 32 and winning 6, that's roughly 1 out of 4, a little less than that. Well, so historically a normal ratio.
Well, the other thing that I find funny is that, like, if we're looking at the last 10 years, they've got, I don't know, 3 or 4, and I feel like they've been to, like, 5 tournaments.
Yeah, they've missed, like, 40% of the tournaments in the last, like, 25 years or something like that.
Yeah.
That's insane. So when he's saying like UConn's running college basketball, they have a high amount of national championships. But if you're missing the tournament, you can't really be running it either. You know?
Yeah, you can't miss the tournament as much as they do. And I know there was a couple of years where they were they couldn't go to the tournament.
We're not counting those as missing.
Yeah, those don't count.
Seven, like, that's insane. Six titles in seven goes. I think Duke's at, like, five titles in, like, 25 Final Fours or, like, 29 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Right. And theirs are all, you know, really, really recent, too.
Yeah, their five titles are since 91 or 92.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nuts. But, yeah, all, but put it in the other context, 25 Final Fours in, like, 35 years or however much it is.
Yeah, no, they've been great. It is, yeah, it is honestly super impressive what Krzyzewski did there. Like, when you actually, like, takes the, especially the thing, like, Izzo hasn't, he's won one national championship, hasn't made the Final Four since, I think, 2009 when they lost to Carolina in the national championship.
They're, yeah.
Unless I'm forgetting one after. And we all regard him as, like, one of the best coaches, like, ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
but shout out to John Shire getting a lot farther than a lot of people thought Duke were going to.
Yeah. And recruiting great. Like, that's what I thought would drop off is the recruiting thing. I'm interested because we kind of, and this is part of the reason maybe Cal, Coach Cal's going to Arkansas. We've kind of seen like the one and done players last couple years haven't been able to have that tournament success where it's been more experienced players and maybe you're getting them out of the transfer portal, so it's not necessarily keeping them all 4 years. But out of the Elite Eight teams, John Shire and Duke were the only ones that had all five players start at Duke.
That's crazy.
Part of that's because they're so young.
Yeah.
But I still think that's very commendable.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
It's very impressive. But, yeah, Calipari's at Arkansas. He had a lifelong contract at Kentucky, which at worst is a top three job.
Right.
With Carolina and Duke.
Yeah.
We put Kansas in there. I would put those other three above Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Or Kansas at four. And Arkansas has had a lot of money. Do you think he just got sick of the fans like riding him?
Yeah, well, I see. Did you see his kind of video announcing he was leaving?
Yeah, like in his living room or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch. I only watched like 30 seconds, but the big thing I took away is he felt like Kentucky needed another voice, which is what Quinn Snyder said when he left the Jazz.
Yeah,
and it's kind of. I do think there's some sense to it, but it also is a thing like a coach is like, I'm not going to get this thing to work. Maybe that's partly my fault. Maybe it's a franchise's fault, but I'm just not going to be able to do it.
Well, I think that's part of why Roy left is he felt like he couldn't necessarily get the players to listen to him.
Yeah.
Basically. Not in the sense that they weren't coachable, but it's just like different than what he's used to.
Yeah, know? Absolutely.
So if you kind of feel like that, it's hard to be a coach and put in that much time if you don't feel like your message is resonating.
Right, yeah. Well, that's why Jerry Sloan quit.
Mid-game, basically.
Right.
Yeah. That was so sad.
Oh, yeah, that was a bummer. And then Darren Williams is gone a couple days later. But
yeah, that was a weird week.
Yeah. It is. I realize if you're Arkansas, you can't give a lifetime contract as an extension. You don't give it to somebody on the first go. But it is funny for Cal to go from Kentucky with a lifetime contract to Arkansas for like a 7-year contract or whatever it is.
And I think he's not even the highest paid coach. So I think he's making $8 million a year still,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously a lot, but I forgot who, I think Bill Self is making nine something at Kansas.
Yeah. I saw that. I don't remember where, but it was a source I trusted that, the Kentucky offered Dan Hurley $11 million, which was very close to your estimate. Or
yeah,
$11 million
12,
a year.
I think. Yeah.
So we'll have to see. I don't think he can leave UConn right now.
But we actually, I think 2 weeks ago we like talked, maybe it was three, about like who we thought could go to Kentucky. And that it was literally like at the same day Kentucky was like, we're not getting rid of Cal.
Uh-huh.
So literally like that same day we were like, hypothetically, what would happen? Names we talked about, Matt Painter, who has not been mentioned.
No, not
he's,
at all.
You know, probably very happy at Indiana. But it'd be hard to say no to Kentucky if you're at Purdue, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
One name we did talk about was Scott Drew at Baylor. He seems like the number one target.
Yeah.
I honestly don't remember who else we talked about.
We didn't mention Mark Pope. He's shown up really high on a lot of these kind of odds lists.
Yeah.
So I don't think either of us think it's going to be Mark Pope. We think that he's got to win a few more tournament games before.
BYU's head coach, Mark Pope.
Yes. Yeah.
He did play at Kentucky, which is part of the reason he's on there.
Yeah.
I would assume.
Right. And I think people think he's a great coach. I just, I certainly wanted to stay at BYU for a long, long time.
I just think the only coaches who shouldn't say yes or at least consider this are John Shire and Hubert Davis, and that's because they're at not only Duke and Carolina, but their alma maters.
Right.
I think every other coach should at least consider it.
Yeah, you got to think about it if you're Dan Hurley.
Yeah, you have to, because, I mean, Connecticut's great. But maybe Dan Hurley, because he's talked himself about how he's like old school, is like hard on his players, and they clearly listen to him.
Yeah.
So it's not, but like he's said that that's how he is. And Kentucky, I don't know if the players that go to Kentucky, it's kind of like how if you, like how Whittingham at Utah football isn't getting 5-star guys that USC's getting.
Right.
But Whittingham can coach those guys at on a different level, the 3 and the 4 stars that he does get. Maybe it's like that where Kentucky can't coach, or like the players at Kentucky you could get in Kentucky are going to be gone after the first year, and Hurley would rather have 3 and 4 year guys.
Yeah. Well, maybe with Cal gone, it stops being that kind of a job. Like, I'm sure they'll get good recruits, but I don't think it's going to quite be like the 50 players that Cal sent to the NBA.
But also, like LSU is just always going to have players leave after 3 years, no matter who's the coach.
Right.
Just because they're getting that good of players.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to recruit them, but, like, if you can recruit the better players, you should.
Yes, for sure.
So, it'd be interesting. I can't believe he's leaving, honestly. Do you think he's just got, because Kentucky basketball is like Alabama or Ohio State football as far as just a delusional fan base.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe delusional is the wrong word, but, like, very high expectations. And we talked, like, Nick Saban was like, if he doesn't make playoff 2 years in a row, and he even did make the playoff, and they're still not happy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Cal did only win one national championship. I'm sure they don't think that's good enough.
Crazy. It feels like more than that.
Yeah, it does. But, I mean, there's a ton. Well, there's certainly a lot more first-round losses.
Yeah.
So, like, there might be, I would be interested to count, I feel like there might be more first-round losses than wins.
Tournament wins?
Or years that they've advanced. Because obviously the year he won the national championship, that's 6 wins or whatever.
Well, it's been like 3 out of 4, because obviously 2020 doesn't count. But I think like 3 out of the last 4, they were out in the first round.
Right.
They did make the Final Four. Was it 2 years? I think 2 years in a row, right? Because didn't Wisconsin beat? No. Wisconsin beat Arizona in the Elite Eight 2 years in a row. Wisconsin beat the undefeated Kentucky team.
They did beat the undefeated Kentucky team.
Didn't they beat Kentucky twice? Am I making that up?
I don't remember that well.
Maybe I'm just thinking of them in Arizona playing. But as someone pointed out, I forgot who it was, so I apologize. I think it was the Lefko guy on TNT. On Ryan Russillo's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, and that's not it, I apologize. But the biggest like complaint about Calipari was like the in-game coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But the hardest part and the most important part of college sports is recruiting. So if your issue with Calipari is the in-game coaching, then those inbound plays better be spectacular if you're giving up that recruiting. Because it's going to be hard to out-recruit what Calipari did.
For sure, yeah.
And,
like, inbound plays, like, I don't want to pretend like they don't matter, but that's, I don't know, an inbound play maybe gets you 6 points a game.
Yeah, if I'm, like, weighting the importance of college coaching, I'd say recruiting's, like, 80 or 75%.
Yeah.
And, obviously, there's a lot more to it, but if you don't have the best players, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you for sure.
Now, basketball's a little bit different because we talked about, like, Duke, a team full of really good freshmen, lost to NC State, a team full of not that good juniors and seniors.
Yeah, well,
in the Elite Eight.
It does, you know, experience matters, size matters. Juniors and seniors are just going to be bigger than freshmen are.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of the Purdue players who are leaving or like going into the portal. It's like, you know, fourth year player, class of 2020. Like Purdue and Connecticut were like old teams.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because at one point it was like Duke and Kentucky, the one and done's taking over. And then now it's been more in the transfer portal. Like you can stay in college and like get guys who maybe weren't a five-star out of high school, but like the Sears kid from Alabama who started at Ohio,
mm-hmm.
he, you know, helped Alabama be Nate Oates would be an interesting coach. I think we talked about him maybe going to Kentucky.
Yes. Yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
So I'm interested to see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't root for get definitely not four, but not like, oh, I don't hate Kentucky, but it's just like anything. They're the biggest name in the sport or one of the biggest names in the sport.
Yes. Yeah.
I honestly can't. What? It must be the NIL money because they are getting a lot of money from like Walmart and Tyson Chicken and stuff with the NIL.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I would feel like you hate Kentucky more because they beat Utah in the national championship for basketball. Big rivals with Duke, who you're, you know, Duke sympathetic, if not a fan.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely don't cheer for him. Maybe I would put him on the dislike scale. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, 5 being neutral, maybe like a 3.5 or a 4, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I'm not losing sleep over it, but I'm usually rooting against. Like, if they're playing Florida, I'm cheering for Florida. If they're playing Tennessee, I'm cheering for Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
If they're playing Ole Miss, I'm cheering for Ole Miss. So I guess I do kind of cheer against them.
Yeah.
But not like a devoting attention. Like the Dodgers, I watch Dodgers games just to see what,
to see,
you know what I mean?
To see if they're going to
lose.
It's
not like that.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Now, anything else before we talk about the women's stuff?
No, I think that's it for the men. It's just UConn will be interesting because obviously the second year they've won, a lot of people are going to be leaving. So, that's a story for next year,
I think. Yeah, interesting. I hate the top 25 range because, like, it's not even settled, like, what players are staying or leaving on their own team, yet alone
right.
where they're transferring into and stuff. So
yeah.
Any top 25 ranking is just so pointless.
Yeah, I agree.
Women's-wise, let's start with the Final Four game, Connecticut-Iowa. A blatant moving screen. Anyone saying it shouldn't have been called is makes no sense. The only argument is, like, that same girl literally tackled an Iowa player like 3 minutes before the ref didn't call it. So if they're going for like consistency, that's one thing. But the girl slid and stuck her elbow out. It's like clearly a foul.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you can't go outside the body.
It's not as like if it's a foul, you call it. It's not like, oh, you don't call in that situation. That's stupid.
Yeah, it's dumb because then it's like, well, I'm just going to cheat on the last play.
Yeah. Like, entertainment-wise, obviously, we'd rather see the shot. But think how pissed I would be if they didn't call that because they want the players to play and then UConn hits that shot and wins.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's ridiculous.
It's absurd. The consistency was bad, for sure. But it was clearly a foul, so nothing else matters. And that should have been the call.
Yeah.
South Carolina is very good.
Very good, yeah.
Did you see the Las Vegas Aces moved? I forgot the name of the arena they play in now, but they're moving the game against the Indiana Fever. That's the name of the team?
Uh-huh.
To the T-Mobile Arena just because they expect Caitlin Clark to like draw that big of a crowd.
To be the number one pick,
yeah. So they're moving it. And she hasn't even been drafted technically by the Indiana Fever yet.
Well, that's kind of nice that you get to stay close to home.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it seems like, I mean, like, Iowa certainly was not a basketball program I had heard of before Caitlin Clark went there, you know. So, clear. I mean, that's some level of importance. Not that she wouldn't be willing to go play in New York or Los Angeles or whatever, but
yeah.
I just think it's nice when people get to drafted to pro teams that seem to be, like, a good fit for them.
Close-ish, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm what was I going to say? I don't remember, but I'm interested to see what Caitlin Clark does, because it's kind of fun seeing WNBA players do to Caitlin Clark what like old NBA players say to current NBA players, like ragging on them.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of fun that that's not gender specific.
Yeah.
That the older generation doesn't like what the young kids are doing.
For sure. So, yeah, and it is something with, like, shooters and scorers, like, oh, I'd be able to lock them down and so all that stuff. So, yeah, I don't I mean, I assume that the rules change in the WNBA similar to how they do in the NBA, and just in the sense that, you know, they want more scoring, they want their shooters open, those sorts of things. And so I imagine she'll still be – I mean, she'll still be able to do good. It's I don't think she's going to be the best player in the WNBA from day one, but
– yeah, I'm interested ratings-wise because the WNBA – or not WNBA, like – Caitlin Clark's college games have been smashing it as far as ratings go. But regular season, that wasn't the case. I'm interested to see what her WNBA ratings look like.
Yeah. And you hope it's better. But, like, a few years ago, like, Sabrina Ionescu certainly was not a big a draw as Caitlin Clark. I think that just shows how big the game's grown. But she's doing phenomenal in the WNBA, and you don't really hear about her. She's not in as many commercials as she used to be. And so you hope Caitlin Clark keeps it up.
Yeah, Caitlin Clark's obviously the biggest, but yeah, Sabrina and Kelsey Plum, probably in that order, have been, I think, the biggest names in the last, what, 10, 15 years to go to the WNBA?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there have been others, you know, Aaliyah Boston is one that comes to mind.
I think Kelsey Plum and Sabrina were bigger than her. And then Caitlin Clark's obviously the biggest. But I don't think it's had a massive – yeah, like you say, it doesn't have a major impact.
Yeah.
So
– well, and part of this, the thing with women's sports and the reason they don't have as much money is, like, the viewership. They can get really, really big viewership numbers. But companies are still not willing to invest the advertising dollars. And because of that, the TV deals are so small. And so that's a lot of the reasons that, you know – the WNBA can't market itself. They can't get as high of salaries for their players. And so just to say that, like, I feel like people are watching the games. I even feel like people are watching the WNBA games, but corporations aren't really advertising it in the way that, like, AT&T really wants to involve itself with the NBA. You know, we're watching a Hulu commercial with Jimmy Butler right now.
Yeah.
You know, ESPN is paying $50 million for the NBA rights.
Yeah, we've even looked at numbers with Kyle, who loves women's basketball more than probably Caitlin Clark does.
Right.
the viewership numbers don't match up with the, like, TV rights deals.
Exactly.
Like, it is higher if, especially if you look at, like, proportionally. I'm not gonna pretend I'm an expert on how that stuff works, but they do get higher viewership than the advertising budget would suggest.
Yes. Yeah. And so that, I think, is, well, I think, yeah, a lot of people are, that's kind of the next step for women's sports is, like, how do we get better TV deals so we can get these athletes the salaries they deserve?
One thing that is kind of cool is women, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, like, NIL wise, men probably do better on average just because of football. Mm-hmm. But the top people are all girls, like Livy Dunn and Caitlin Clark and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, Caleb Williams, I would assume, is the highest. But, like, women, like, the top women do fantastic.
Yeah.
NIL stuff.
Which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been trying to get Kyle on. He's either sick or out of town, then I'm going out of town. But he knows more than both of us on this respective subject.
Yeah.
But
so we'll come in. Yeah, WNBA is going to... Well, it is weird because they play opposite of the men, so they're going to have to do the draft and
pretty soon
just to get their players up to speed and be ready for July, August.
Well,
I think they start maybe May or June.
I've seen mock drafts already.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's
for the WNBA.
It's gonna be
it
quick.
Seems like they've all been the exact same. Like, Caitlin Clark number one, Cameron Brink number two. I forget the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I was thinking about, like, women's soccer in the World Cup. We're all in on tons of viewership support.
Uh-huh.
But, like, the NWSL, I feel like people are way more into, like, club or college women's basketball than women's soccer. But, like, on an international level, soccer dominates.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Right.
You think it's just like the March, like the reason like the ratings have been so good is March Madness is an easy format, or like we all know what the World Cup is, things like that.
I think that helps. I think the NWSL is new. I mean, I also think it goes back to TV deals. Like, it's hard to watch NWSL games.
It is. I haven't watched the Royals games because I don't know how.
Right.
Like.
Yeah, it's tricky to actually watch the NWSL. And with March Madness, everybody has ESPN or knows how they can watch ESPN.
Yeah.
Right, which is ESPN and had the rights for the women, CBS for the men. So that's something that's got to change for the NWSL for sure.
Interesting. Excited. Let's talk some football, shall we?
Let's talk football.
Let's talk some NFL draft stuff. So let me ask you this. Do you want to start with the top 32 players or the quarterback article?
Let's start with the quarterbacks. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then we'll
pull my article up here. So premise of this article, again, it's top six guys: Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy, Bo Nix, Michael Penix. Can go through the schools as well. I probably should have done that. It's where I would like to see them play. So Caleb Williams, I put Minnesota. He's obviously going to Chicago. There's zero doubt on that. Well, I'd rather see him in Minnesota. So it's just why I want to see these people. Some are realistic. Like Jaden Daniels, I put to Washington. That's a very realistic possibility. And then JJ McCarthy, well, that's Miami. That's not likely. Michael Penix, Seattle, possible. Actually, I guess Jaden Daniels is the only like kind of realistic one.
Yeah.
But so that's what I did.
Well, I guess I was going to say, let's start with Jaden Daniels, actually, and then I want to come back to some of these others that maybe seem unlikely, but I think would be interesting for a lot of reasons. But most realistic, Jaden Daniels to Washington. They're in the right spot of the draft where it feels like they're going to be picking between him and Marvin Harrison Jr., right?
Or Drake May.
Oh, are they their second?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, they're second. So they could get Drake May.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. Yeah, I don't know.
I just realized I spelled Daniel's name wrong in here. Yeah, so it'd either be Daniels or Drake May is my assumption at court that who they would take.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I know this is a quarterback's article. I'd be really tempted to take Marvin Harrison Jr.
He's very good.
He seems like he's just we haven't talked about a receiver like this in many, many years.
Well, if you think about Washington, so that'd be Terry McLaurin, John Dotson, and Marvin Harrison Jr. That's a pretty good group.
Yeah. Then it's like anybody can play quarterback. You can get a second round quarterback and they'll play good in that offense.
Yeah. Yeah, you could they could have gotten Kirk Cousins. They didn't. That would have been funny if they got Kirk. I didn't even think. I forgot he played for them. That would have been kind of funny.
But yeah, Jaden Daniels. Why does the Commanders make more sense for him than the Bears or some of these other teams with high picks?
So, good thing about Jaden Daniels, quick. Everything he does is quick. Throws it quick, takes off quick. He is just a quick player, as far as actually running.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive coordinator in Washington now, he runs I would say simple. I don't think Jaden Daniels needs simple, but I think the easier it is, the faster you can play, you know?
Yes.
Like, the more you're thinking about stuff, the you're not playing as fast. Where Jaden Daniels is at college, at LSU, you watch him play, he's player one, player two, I'm running. It was so fast. So I think in Washington, he has playmakers like Terry McLaurin and Johan Dotson who can get open. I think Washington's better than most everyone else does. I think they have a decent offensive line. So I think going in there with that offensive system, good playmakers, it allowed him to play to what his strengths were at LSU, which is finding people, taking off.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think people, in a lot of senses, I often think this about literature and books, but it certainly applies with sports. Complicated does not mean good.
Mm-mm.
Right? Yeah, I hate that. If something is working and it's easy, the easiness does not make it bad, and it doesn't necessarily make it easier to stop.
Yeah.
So,
remember the Titans. Run six plays. If you do them really, really well, doesn't matter how complicated the defensive scheme is or how smart they are. At some point, it's about beating your guy.
Yes. Yeah. No. And that's something I think there's an assumption that plays are always trying to trick your opponent, and you're certainly always trying to get the best matchup, and if the defense knows what you're doing, they can get a better matchup. But it's really about, like, this play is going to put my player in a position to go and make a play, right? And if you've got, you know, if you really like these receivers like you do, then that stuff should work. If you've got that, that's why having skill players is so important, or having, like, a really good running back. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, at some point it comes down to, like, just lining up and doing your job. I think Washington's offense can do that. Where Jane Downs at LSU is throwing to two receivers who are going to get – Malik Nabers could be a top 10 – will be a top 10 pick. Brian Thomas Jr. could go in the first round as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, just everyone at LSU is fantastic, obviously.
Right.
So, now, Washington's not the 49ers personnel-wise.
Sure.
But I think they're good enough where – as let's say Jane Daniels went to New England – I'd hit any quarterback to go to New England, but Jane Daniels specifically, no one would be open. He'd be thinking he'd take – I think he'd try to do too much because the other guys can't do it. Where I think Washington, that takes some of the pressure off of him, and he can – he's shown in a good system he can be great. He won the Heisman.
Yeah.
So, yep. I think that'd be the best spot for Jaden. And that's, again, the really the only realistic one, or kind of realistic one on here.
Yeah. Well, let's the one that I was interested in, this one stands out because I guess that's not totally true, but to me it's the team that seems most established at quarterback, which is the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
You like to see JJ, not only you want to see JJ McCarthy there, you think that he could do better than Tua in a lot of aspects.
Yeah. Well, so JJ McCarthy, what he does well is his knock is that he's like, oh, there's not a lot of reps. He wasn't throwing a lot. He wasn't asked to do a lot. You know who else isn't asked to do, like, a lot? Is, like, Tua or Brock Purdy or Jared Goff or Jared Goff in Los Angeles, too, you know? Yeah.
Again, complicated, not necessarily good.
But what J.J. McCarthy did, won a national championship on a fantastic football team.
Mm-hmm.
He has a great arm. Where he really, I mean, if he wants, he can start taking some stuff off the ball. Like, he's just rifling it in. But great touch. He can layer it. He can make any throw you want. He is more athletic than Tua. He's not going to be confused for Lamar Jackson. But he can play outside of the pocket, play outside of structure. At Michigan, he was doing a lot of either, like, 5-7-step drops or moving the pocket, rolling out, using his athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
He also get the ball out quick. So Mike McDaniel, what he wants to do is get the ball out quick, have the quarterback make quick decisions, hit it in the middle of the field, hit the guy. McDaniel wants it to be like Madden in the sense like, you know, I'm doing all this work, drawing it up. The opposite of what we were just talking about, like McDaniel wants the offense to be like not the playmakers, but the offense itself.
Yeah.
They have great playmakers, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, of course. When you throw JJ McCarthy in there, it just unlocks a next level of creativity for McDaniel.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think it'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Because McCarthy, I think he's probably not going to be like Patrick Mahomes, but I think he can be like better than Kirk Cousins. That's kind of the threshold for like, are you, you know, I think he can cross that threshold.
Yeah.
I think he'd be better than Tua.
There's a lot of teams that would love a quarterback better than Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. So,
Cool.
Now, I don't, if J.J. McCarthy, same thing. A lot of these guys depend on where they go. I think J.J. McCarthy in Miami is so fun to watch. Or you can say the same thing about San Francisco or the Rams, any of those type of offense. But I think Miami, particularly with the playmakers and McDaniel's creativity, would be fun.
That's awesome. Now, are there any of these quarterbacks that you think is the most interesting or that the idea of you playing on that team gets you the most excited?
Well, I think Michael Penix to the Seahawks would be fun just because it's the same offensive coordinator and they have...
Yeah, I like this one too.
Yeah, so he's playing with three great receivers in Seattle. He had three receivers from the University of Washington going to get drafted in the NFL. So this would be the least change or adjustment I can think of any quarterback.
Yeah, definitely.
Literally the same offensive coordinator. How often does that happen?
Yeah, he could live. He might not have to move.
Literally,
if he doesn't want to.
Same city. So I think that'd be fun. I'd be excited. I don't think Maybe in the second round, if he falls, Seattle would take him and try to trade up. But it also makes sense timing-wise because Geno has, I think, 2 more years on his contract. They could get out of it after the next year.
Mm-hmm.
They need a backup quarterback. They probably, like, have one on the roster, but I don't even know who it is.
Well, who are some of the other teams you think would draft Penix before Seattle has a shot?
He's been linked a lot to the Raiders.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Seattle would be way better for him, too.
Yeah, the Raiders are another place like the Jets, so it's like, oh, that's going to ruin your career.
I think, you know, this is impossible, but the 2021 Buccaneers, like with Bruce Arians running the offense,
yeah,
that would be perfect.
Yeah.
That'd be the dream. I could, if he falls second round, though, we do get teams like Tampa. I know this gave Baker a 3-year deal, but like taking a quarterback in the second round does not mean anything. And Penix is talented enough. He has the best arm, like the as far as like the ball coming off his hand and like placement. Out of anyone in the draft.
Right.
So I think a team like Tampa would be interesting. Denver doesn't have a second round pick, so they'd have to trade back.
Yeah.
I was actually going to give Bo Nix to Denver, but the more I was writing about it, I was like, well, that's not a good situation for him. I ended up giving Bo Nix to the Detroit Lions, which I think could be fun. But anyway, yeah, so Penix to the Seahawks. I'm trying to think of other teams. So the... I mean, honestly, if you get a second round, the Falcons could be in play. I gave them Drake May here, but the Falcons could be in play.
Uh-huh.
Pittsburgh could be. I think Pittsburgh. Now, I hate Arthur Smith because he destroyed like Kyle Pitts' fantasy relevance. But the idea of Michael Penix throwing to George Pickens like deep balls, like I like that a lot.
Uh-huh.
So I'd say Pittsburgh, Tampa, or I'd say those two if it gets past the first round, which is very possible.
Yep. Interesting.
I actually really like Pittsburgh too. Now as we're talking about it.
Well, I hope that and that's the thing. Like we talked about this last week, I think, but the situation that you get drafted into is so important, and having a coach that knows how to use you so you can show what you're good at, and so yeah, I hope for all these guys they end up in offenses similar to what you've described them as.
If anyone goes to New England, I think they're in trouble.
They're, yeah.
Whatever it is.
4-year NFL career.
But yeah, no. So yeah, give kind of a little blurb on what I've been talking about. But for the top six guys, why I think they should be in each place, this is on mjdoubletake.com as of tomorrow. The 11th is when I'll put it up there. Check it out. It's kind of fun because people aren't even talking about Caleb Williams anymore because there's like, oh, he's going to Chicago no matter what. It's still a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
You know? Or like Atlanta's been out of the quarterback conversation because they signed Kirk Cousins, but still a lot to talk about there. So, I just want to do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like it. I think it's good. And I think it gets people thinking about like what teams are doing and what quarterbacks are good at, you know? And so it's good for understanding, football better.
Yeah. And I tried to make it, like I said, I had like half these guys on different teams when I started, but I was writing, I was like, no, actually this makes more sense. So that makes more sense.
Yeah.
One thing I did that is the same is I put out my top players of the NFL draft. I was going to do top 50, but I just did top 32. It's nice and clean, just first-round players. Any surprises on your end as you went through that?
I think...
Or anything else on the article before we move
on? No. I think we're good to move on to that. Okay. Kenyon Mitchell at number 12, I like. That's... a little bit surprising, only because a lot of people have him going to the Eagles at number 23, 24. So that would be quite a bit of a fall for him.
Yeah.
So Brock Bowers at 10, is that... well, I think we end up with this thing where, like, a couple years ago, a lot of people were like, Kyle Harrison is the best player in the draft. That safety out of Notre Dame, right?
Hamilton,
yeah. Kyle Hamilton, he's the best player in the draft. Probably not going to get drafted in the top 10 because he plays safety.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm wondering if a similar thing here has happened with Brock Bowers playing tight end.
It kind of is. So I initially kind of put Brock Bowers at like 20-something because it was like, you know, he's a little undersized, run blocking, not an effort thing, but he's just undersized, you know?
Right.
Like, how's that going to translate? What's the impact he's going to have? But then I was like, you know, don't overthink it. Like, I tried to look at this, like, how sure am I that this is going to be a really good player? I valued, like, a really high floor over, like a boom or bust player.
Yes, yeah, high floor matters.
If I'm getting Brock Bowers, I know I'm getting a weapon who can get me first downs, create after the catch. I think he can be used a lot like George Kittle, who's a better run blocker. But, or even like Deebo Samuel, like any of those like yak weapons, like I think Brock Bowers can be used like that.
Yeah.
And I think he's just a mismatch where he's athletic enough where like a linebacker can't cover him. He's big enough where a slot corner can't cover him. So it's just about creating mismatches. So that's kind of where I ended up is like I have a very high confidence level he's going to be. Unless he's in a bad situation, of course.
Yeah.
But in the right situation, it can be a really, literally like a mix probably between Kittle and Deebo Samuel, which would be great, right?
Sounds like a very good football player.
Yeah. Nice. So that's where I got to Brock. And Quinyon Mitchell, I honestly wanted to put him higher, but there's just a lot of really good players there. And he's actually my third cornerback, but they're all really good. I like them all. Just because I had more defensive players higher than most people. Most lists are a lot heavier on offense. So I think it is realistic for either him or Terrion Arnold or Cooper DeJean from Iowa, my top three, for at least one of them, if not two or all three, to be there when the Eagles draft. Now, we've talked about, though, the Eagles are and should take a tackle, but I think they'll be available.
Right, yeah, which will be interesting.
Yeah.
So, well, and that is, I think looking at these, like, you do have more quarterbacks in here than I think we would have most years. A lot of cornerbacks, really a lot of offensive tackles. What is the position that you're most intrigued by this year's draft?
Intrigued by? Probably corner, just because they're like all different players. Like Cooper DeJean, I have him number 7. Love him. Iowa guy. He's interesting because he can play corner, nickel, safety. I think he could literally like any position in the back 7. I think he could like step in and be like a pass rusher on like some like obvious pass just for fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like how Eric Weddle at Utah played literally every position.
Like including quarterback.
I think Cooper DeJean is athletic enough to do that. So that's intriguing. Terrion Arnold didn't test as well. He's ran, I believe, 4.50 or 4.52 40 at the combine. But just watching him play so smooth, there's like zero separation. So I really like Terrion Arnold. And Mitchell, Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, we talked about, blew up the combine, matched it with great play at the Senior Bowl. So he's going to go really high, I think. Nate Wiggins, I have down at 30. I'm a little lower on him, but I'm still intrigued because he ran a 4.28 or 4.27 of the combine. Weighed in at 165, but then his pro day gained like 10 or 15 pounds. So,
oh, wow.
I don't think the 165 or the 4.28 are legit just because he's playing closer to probably 180 or 175.
Right.
He had a couple plays against North Carolina where I think it was our running back, but like broke free, 10 yards of separation, heading to the end zone. And then Nate Wiggins came like from behind the play, I think the other side of the field, hit the ball out of the back of the end zone. They got a touchback. Clemson got the ball back. So hustle plays like that are great. But also like in the actual like run game, he doesn't seem interested in tackling, which concerns me.
Not ideal.
His effort is there on some plays, but not on like the basic stuff.
Yes.
But he's just a very good athlete. He's a little small for my taste, but I'm still intrigued by him. So I'd say corners, there's so many different guys. Cooley McKinstry, actually, I skipped over him, Alabama. So I have 5 in the top 32. Coming in, he was the number one guy. He's kind of dropped off. I think we're overthinking him a little bit. He's very good, like very fluid, understands the position, very smart. I think he's going to be a better player than where he's drafted. So all 5 of them were like, I think, pretty different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably a long answer, but corner.
Yeah, no, I like that.
Cornerback.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. Who is somebody on here that is maybe not showing up on other lists that you like?
So few guys, as far as like the first round guys, Keon Coleman at 17. Most lists I see him on are like 30s or 40s. I think we're crazy over. I think he's incredible. He's mm-hmm. basketball player at Michigan State for Tom Izzo. Like It wasn't just like Draymond Green. He was like legitimately on the Draymond Green on the football team. Like Keon Cole was like legitimately on the basketball team.
Yeah.
At Michigan State. Uh-huh. Izzo's not just doing that just for fun.
No, yeah, definitely not.
His biggest knock is his athleticism. He ran a 4.6 something at the 40. Two things. You know who else ran a 4.6? Was Cooper Kupp. He's fine.
Right.
He was also athletic enough to return punts at Florida State.
Yeah.
So if you're Florida State, you're getting the best athletes from the state of Florida, and they're like, oh, Keon Coleman's our best guy. Uh-huh. I think that's fine. At the gauntlet of the combine, that drill where you're like running in straight line and catching balls, Keon Coleman, A, ran the straightest line, and B, had the fastest GPS time.
Yeah.
So I don't really lean a lot into that, but it doesn't hurt.
No, yeah, for sure.
He also, and more than anything, if you watch the LSU game, he made, I've talked the whole show about how good LSU is in football and how they're great athletes.
Right.
Even in the basketball section, we were talking about LSU football. He made them look like high school kids. Like, just embarrassed them. Just ran right by them.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what the issue is with Keon Coleman. I hope no one in my fantasy league listens to this show and knows I'm going to draft him pretty high. Yeah, I think Keon Coleman. Another guy, Zach Frazier, interior offensive lineman from West Virginia. State wrestling champion in high school.
Wrestlers are maybe the best athletes.
Exactly, yeah. He's someone who, I've seen like late 30s, you know, 40s. He's someone I put over like a Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU, the receiver, or some other players just because like I feel very good he's going to be a good player. And maybe in the first round we want to take home run swings. I'd rather leave the draft like knowing I got a good starter, especially if I'm picking like in the like late 20s or early 30s.
For sure.
Like wouldn't your Philadelphia, wouldn't you feel good? Like, hey, this guy might not, it's not as good as Jason Kelce, but he's a good player.
Yeah, you know? Like, if he's going to be a good NFL player, have a good career, be a plus offensive lineman,
yeah.
I think that's great.
So I think Zach Frazier sees experience. Again, the wrestling, tough, like, I love all that. So I put him higher than most people have him.
Yeah.
So those are probably the two I'm higher on. But, like, Ladd McConkey, I have a 24, receiver from Georgia. He's someone who I, like, didn't love. And then, like, watching him play... And then he crushed the combine, too. So then I went back and watched him. I was like, oh, he is actually a really good player.
Yeah.
Or Ricky Pearsall from Florida, two other receivers who I really like.
Uh-huh. Awesome. It's a great list.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's just on my Twitter. That's not an article. I just tweeted that out, but it's at Jacob Cowden 28. Well, let's run through the whole thing real quick. And then I think we wrap up. After the top five, of course.
Of course.
So in my top 32, I'll just go eight at a time. So Caleb Williams, quarterback USC, Marvin Harrison Jr., wide receiver Ohio State, Drake May, quarterback UNC, Roma Dunze, wide receiver Washington, Leatu Latu, edge UCLA, Joe Alt, offensive tackle Notre Dame, Cooper DeJean, cornerback Iowa, Malik Nabers, wide receiver LSU. I have Nabers. Most people have Nabers ahead of Dunze, and Leatu Latu's. No one has him in the top five.
Yeah.
He's just like the best like skill set as far as like when people talk about using your hands as a pass rusher, but also, and he didn't test like his explosiveness at the combine wasn't great. I think he only had like a 34 inch vertical.
Yeah.
So that's not great. But PFF has a metric called GAS, game athleticism score.
Uh-huh.
And he was in the 99th percentile on that. So
yeah, that seems like a really good thing for
you. Combine that with like the best like skills as a pass rusher. I'm feeling good about that.
Yeah.
Okay. So nine, Troy Fautanu, offensive tackle from Washington. 10, Brock Bowers, tight end, Georgia. 11, Terrion Arnold, cornerback, Alabama. 12, Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback, Toledo. 13, Taliese Fuaga, offensive tackle, Oregon State. 14, Dallas Turner, edge from Alabama. 15, Jared Verse, edge, Florida State. 16, Graham Barton, offensive tackle, Duke. Barton can play anywhere in the top along the offensive line, but I put him at tackle.
Yeah.
17, Keon Coleman, wide receiver, Florida State. 18, Jackson Powers Johnson, interior offensive line, Oregon. 19, J.J. McCarthy, quarterback, Michigan. 20, Jaden Daniels, quarterback, LSU. 21, J.C. Latham, offensive tackle, Alabama. 22, Jerzon Newton, defensive tackle, Illinois. 23, Cooley McKinstry, cornerback, Alabama. 24, Ladd McConkey, wide receiver, Georgia. So, yeah, those two quarterbacks, I think, are a little lower than other people.
Uh-huh.
25, almost done. 25, Byron Murphy, the second, defensive tackle, Texas. 26, Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver, Florida. I saw him play live, and he's just, like, stuck out. Like, I saw him in that Utah-Florida game in the Swamp.
Yeah.
He just, like, stood out. It was like, and I didn't know, honestly, I didn't really know who he was going into the game. He's a white receiver, so I wasn't like, oh, this guy's probably really good.
Yes.
But he's just like, everything he was doing is like, oh, wow. And then you watch him more, you're like, oh, you really like this guy. And then he crushed the combine. 27, Zach Fraser, interior offensive line, West Virginia. 28, Olu Fashanu, offensive tackle, Penn State. 29, Jordan Morgan, offensive tackle, Arizona. 30, Nate Wiggins, cornerback, Clemson. 31, Tyler Guyton, offensive tackle, Oklahoma. 32, Peyton Wilson, linebacker, North Carolina State. He's a very good player, very experienced. I think if he didn't have medical injuries or concerns, he'd be going a lot higher. I think he's the best linebacker in the class, so great combination of athleticism and instinct.
I like it.
So,
well, you guys will have to head on to Twitter and let Jake know where he's wrong.
Check it out. Check it out. Now, top five most draft picks by school since the year 2000.
Since the year 2000.
There are no ties, so you're going to have to get all five. All
right. Perfect. So, Alabama is on here.
Yep, they're number two.
Number two. Ohio State, I think, is on here.
They're number one.
I think... I mean, Georgia came out a little bit late. LSU.
They're number three.
Yeah, like not Texas. I don't think it could be Notre Dame. I don't think it's USC or UCLA. And so I think, yeah, you know, Clemson's had a little bit shorter run, but I'm going to say Clemson.
Mm-mm.
No. Okay, so that's one strike. I'll say Georgia.
They're Georgia's six.
Georgia's six. Okay. Who?
You want to hit?
Yeah, since I've got a strike. USC is making a little bit more sense now that I think about it, but.
Is that a guess?
No, it's not a guess. I want to hear the hint.
Okay, well, two hints. Remember, 2000.
Yeah.
They're from the same state, these last two schools.
They're from the same state. Okay, so... I mean, I kind of actually want to say Oklahoma, but Oklahoma State, I don't think, would be in the top five. And if it was USC... then that doesn't leave me with, like, it's not Cal, it's not UCLA. I haven't said Florida yet. So, any Florida schools, really. So
there's three Florida schools.
There are three Florida schools. One of them's got to be Florida.
Yeah, they're five.
Okay. And then Florida State for number two.
It's Miami.
Miami.
Yeah.
Oh, 2000. Yeah, that was the 2000.
Yeah.
Dang it. Yeah.
So they did a lot of their work early.
Yes. Yeah. Miami totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were close. So Miami was 119. Florida was 117. Georgia was 115. And USC was 112. So, and Florida State 109. So all super close.
Yeah.
Oklahoma 101.
So it was in the right range.
Yeah, for sure. Ohio State and Alabama are tied for the most first round picks at 31. Miami and Florida is 30. So right behind them, there's a little bit of drop there.
Yeah.
But so that was close. That was like the most, usually either you get it right away or it's like impossible.
Yes. That yeah. That was a competitive one.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Well, again, that was the last episode for a few weeks. Cause I'll be in Spain. I'll come back, have a little write up on the Real Madrid game. We'll talk about it. NBA playoffs, when do they start? They'd probably be underway by the time we get back.
Yeah, I think they probably will be.
So we'll just have to have a little recap there.
We'll just jump in.
Yeah. Appreciate everybody listening. Again, I know if you're already here, I gotta start saying this at the beginning, but the 5-star review, subscribe, all that stuff actually does help quite a bit, so appreciate everybody who's done that. If you haven't, feel free to do so. And we'll talk to you guys, not next week, talk to you guys in a few weeks.